This is James Throckmorton, and today I want to discuss Cain's sin, the way of Cain. You know, I've actually experienced seeing some people get arguments and people that really wanted to take Cain's side against God, that God was somehow unfair to Cain. Well, if we went back to Genesis, the fourth chapter, that's where the initial sin of Cain is recorded. And just to refresh our memory a little bit, we know that it was time for a sacrifice that God had commanded. That's self-evident. It was something that God had told him to do. Probably it was on one of the annual holy days, but there's no evidence or proof of that in the Bible. But it's immaterial. It was commanded by God, and he specified a way that it was to be done. God told Cain and Abel the religious practice that he required. And Abel followed his instructions to the letter. Cain said, "I've got a better idea. I've got a better idea." It doesn't deal with the difference between grain and vegetables and meat. It had to do with what God had specified. And I won't get off on that subject today, but if we understand the original purpose of the sacrifices and what happened after man sinned, we'll understand that God pointed out to man through the sacrifices that the shedding of blood was required for redemption. Now, I won't go off on that subject, the subject of redemption right now, but that's self-explanatory. The bottom line is, Cain decided he would do it his way. And when God rejected his way, it made him mad at his brother, and he killed him. Now, I've met a lot of people in my tenure in the church, and have dealt with a lot of people, and I'm going to pull out a couple examples. I won't call the people's names, but I've seen people, various people, do all these things. More than one person do these things. And I'll use, for example, keeping the Sabbath, and primarily keeping the holy days. But I've seen people that way about the Sabbath that they just didn't want to keep all of it. They were sort of glad to keep Saturday, the daylight hours. I know one individual that found a reason to eliminate Friday night in his own mind because he didn't like what God specified. Now, when it comes to the Feast of Tabernacles and the Holy Days, I've seen people hunt up all sorts of excuses. One of the most used excuses, even by Sabbath keepers, is the fact that the holy days can only be observed in Jerusalem. Which, anybody that says that really is pretty ignorant of what the Bible and the story flow of the Bible, and the fact that the holy days were in effect for a long, long time, not only in effect, but commanded for a long, long time before David ever conquered Jerusalem, and certainly a long time before the Ark of the Covenant was moved down there and before Solomon's Temple was built. So the holy days were kept other places in Israel for decades and decades and actually hundreds of years. And so that's a cop-out. What people say, well, we'll find a reason not to do what God says. That's what Cain did. That was his first sin, was to find a reason. Now, I remember people with the Feast of Tabernacles and how people can always sometimes find reason not to go. I remember one individual that... I remember several individuals, but I'm thinking about one specifically, that when they went to the first feast, they were were not happy there. They were really not happy there. And the person said to me, I'm only here because God makes me be here. Only because God makes me be here. And that same individual would find a reason not to stay any longer at the feast than they had to. Now, I've seen quite a few people do that, that they'd go to the feast, they'd stay up till usually the last great day, and then they would skip the last great day. And they were doing the same thing that Cain did. You know, Cain did that, and what did Cain do? Because he disagreed with what God had commanded, or what God did, the action that God took, he hated God. I know I've heard people say when things weren't going exactly the way they wanted them to go, when they were having problems in their life and things were not working out just like they wanted them to work out, that they hated God. Now, that's a dangerous place to be. That's what Cain said by his actions. He hated God. Remember what Christ told his disciples. If the world hates you, remember that it hated me first. Before Cain could hate Abel, his brother, he had to hate God. And so he hated God. He couldn't kill God. He would have if he could have, probably. But he killed his brother. And so really what Cain's sin is, the way of Cain, is that Cain just didn't want to follow God's instruction. And that's human nature. We all have to deal with that from time to time. That we can figure ways around things. Now, I want to turn over and in the book of Jude, because actually there's more said about the way of Cain in the New Testament than there is the Old Testament. Because we get the story of Cain killing Abel and God putting a mark on Cain. This wasn't a racial distinction. It was something that protected Cain from his brothers and sisters that would have had to exist, because that's at that time, from his fellow human beings, that God put a mark on him and actually protected him from being killed. God doesn't always punish for misconduct instantly. In fact, he seldom does. A lot of people are able to get away with all sorts of abominable acts because God is just let them live their life out. And, you know, as human beings, we never think about the fact that we're a product of everything we do. You've heard it said, you are what you eat. You can always also say, you are what you think. And you take that with you when you die. We need to remember that. I want to turn to the Epistle of Jude, one chapter book in the Bible written by half-brother of Jesus Christ, brother of James. We look in verse 11, and I'm breaking it in context. You can go back and read it if you want some background. But he says, woe unto them, for they have gone the way of Cain and run greedily after the error of Balaam for profit and perished in the rebellion of Korah. So here, the way of Cain is tied to three other specific events in the Bible. Three specific events. Now, we know, and I'll start with Korah, because Korah rebelled against God for exactly the same reason that Cain did, except instead of substituting his own sacrifice for what God had commanded, he wanted to substitute himself for Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. He disagreed with God's choice of leadership. I've seen that happen a lot. I've certainly watched that happen in the New Testament church, and there'd be those out there that would sort of disagree with that, because there's been a tendency in the modern day church to disregard the ministerial structure that the Bible teaches for the New Testament church. and I'm not going to go in on that today, and I wouldn't argue with anybody about it, because you either agree with God or you disagree with God. It's that simple. That was Cain's action. And so Korah rebelled against God because of his choice of leadership. Korah was sure he could do a better job, and he had the inside with God. Well, God did take action there, and we found out what Korah really had coming to him, and he received it, him and all of his followers. But the thing I want to zero in on is another event that happened in the Bible, and it's back in Numbers, the 22nd, 23rd, and 24th chapters. The Bible spends quite a bit of time dealing with this, with an event that happened with Balaam and Balak. Now, what does this have to do with the way of Cain and the rebellion of Korah? Well, let's go back and review the story. I'm not going to turn back to Numbers and the 22nd, 23rd, and 24th chapter, because it's too much to read in the time that I have allotted for this message. But so let's review back in Numbers the story of Balaam and Balak and what Balaam did. Now, what his function was, I really don't know. Balaam really had contact with God. In fact, it says in these scriptures that there was times that the Spirit of God came on Balaam and he, in effect, prophesied. He knew, just like God had instructed Cain, God somehow had instructed Balaam, and Balaam very well knew what God's will was. But Balak, after the children of Israel came out of Egypt and God blessed them and they defeated a lot of enemies, Balak was scared of Israel. And he wanted to find some way to curse them. He wanted to find some way to stop them from conquering his territory. And he did find a way. I'll mention that. He did find a way. And so he asked Balaam, he didn't ask, he offered to pay Balaam to curse Israel. You know, there's a lot of people in this day and age that have paid money and are paying money to curse modern day Israel. There's been a lot of money changed hands to curse the Church of God down through the years. Now, you can't do that. You can only, and Balaam pointed that out to Balak, that Israel couldn't be cursed. And of course, if you read the story, it drags on. Balaam finally had to show Balak and how Israel could be cursed. And the only way Israel could be cursed, the only way that modern day Israel can be cursed, only the way the Church of God can be cursed, is when we stop obeying God. We go Cain's way. Make exactly the same mistake that Cain made. That's why these are lumped together in by Jude. And so what Balaam told Balak, and of course in the story everybody gets their mind on the donkey that talked, and he becomes the star of the show, and nobody pays a lot of attention to the rest of the story. You know, Paul Harvey wasn't there to explain them the rest of the story to him. But what Balaam did, he taught Balak that he couldn't curse Israel, but they could curse themselves. That they could curse themselves by disobeying God. You know, the people that figure out a way around keeping the Sabbath or doing anything that God has commanded, the ones that refused over the years to keep the last great day, or hated God for some imagined reason. I'll put it that way because that's what it would be, imagined reason. Sometimes we turn on God because we just don't understand what He's doing, and we look at the here and now as being the most important thing that there is, and it's really not, but it's our nature as human beings because it's all we know. Now, this is not the only time that this is mentioned in the Bible, in the New Testament. I want to look at a couple of other examples. Let's look in 2 Peter, the second chapter, in verse 15. And it doesn't mention Cain here, but Jude's already linked Korah, Cain, and Balaam together. He's already linked them together. In verse 15 of 2 Peter 2, they have forsaken the right way and gone astray, following the way of Balaam, the son of Beor, who loved the wages of unrighteousness. He wanted the pay for being disobedient to God, unrighteous. Just like what was the pay? Somebody that didn't want to stay for all the feast and without, not that there's not a legitimate reason, you know, if somebody was sick or had to go to the hospital, that's understandable. They got to go home, and that was their wages of unrighteousness. That was their wages of unrighteousness. That's not the only place in the Bible that this is mentioned. It's also mentioned over in the book of Revelation in the second chapter. But before we read that, I want to talk a little bit about the modern world in which we live. I want us to apply it to the modern day nation of Israel, and I also want us to apply it to the Church of God and the state we find ourselves in. Now, the last sermon I gave was called Abominations, and it painted a pretty bleak picture of what's going on in the world. I'll just give you one example. I heard something this week, and it just absolutely astounded me. Something that's happening in this country, and there's just one organization, just this one organization that is responsible for aborting a baby, one every 94 seconds. One for every 94 seconds. Again, the only word I can use for that is abomination. It's certainly unrighteous. But do you realize what that's doing? That's a curse on this nation. Just like when the people of Jerusalem took their children down to the Kidron Valley and sacrificed the pagan gods, that's an abomination. When Cain killed Abel, it destroyed Cain. Oh, Cain, God made sure that Cain got to live. He probably lived to be a ripe old age, but God wasn't ready to take him to the great white throne judgment yet. He had to deal with what he had done, and he cursed himself. The way of Cain is your actions, you're disobedient to God, cursing yourself. There is a consequences to disobedience. I have a sermon online titled The Consequences of Disobedience. And there are consequences to our actions. There are consequences. Let's look in Revelation, the second chapter. And I want to read a little bit of this. It's the messages to the churches, which I'm not going to get on the subject, off on the subject of explaining these messages. I'm not talking about church errors. I'm just talking about something that can happen to any Christian, and probably all these things through all these churches just about happens to every Christian in their life from the time that God calls them till they die. Probably we're all exposed to these opportunities to do what's right and the opportunities to do what's wrong. That was Cain's choice. It's our choice. And so I want to read in 2nd chapter and verse 12 of Revelation. This is a message to the angel of the church in Pergamos. These sayings say, "He who has a sharp two-edged sword, I know your works and well where you dwell, where Satan's throne is, and you hold fast to my name and do not deny my faith, even in the days of the Antipas was my faithful martyr who was killed among you where Satan's dwelt." And so these people lived right in the midst of where Satan dwells. Well, I give you a little piece of information that you might not think about. The Bible says Satan is the god of this world. We live where he dwells. He's here and active. He's been known to come to Passover service. He did with Christ and his original apostles. And that's not the only time he's been there. I've suspected a few times that he might have been there at other services that I've conducted and attended, because that's where a really bad negative attitude can arise sometimes, is at Passover. I had a lady one time that called me right while I was trying to conduct Passover services, called me on the phone in the motel meeting room that we were meeting in, and tried her best to delay Passover. And I tried to be kind to her, but it delayed us getting started Passover probably for 20 or 30 minutes. And that's not a natural thing to do. It's not a natural thing to do. In fact, that woman who had been really, I thought, a fine person, never recovered from that event. She left the church. She'd already left it. She'd already made a decision. So I don't want to get off on that subject, but here in Revelation 2 and verse 14, God had just complimented this church on what the things they were doing right. And so he, and the message to all the churches are this way, it's complimentary, and then it points out the shortcomings. "But I have a few things against you, because you have there those who hold the doctrine of Balaam." And notice, and have you ever seen this happen in the Church of God? You see it happening in the nation and in the world today, for that matter, if you want to make a long-range application to want to destroy society, want to destroy the structure of the Church of God, or the nation of Israel, past or present. That, and what God doesn't say to them, he doesn't tell them that everybody in the group holds the doctrine of Balaam. He said, "Because you have there those who hold the doctrine of Balaam, who taught Balak to put a stumbling block before the children of Israel, to eat things sacrificed to idols, and to commit sexual immorality." That's what Balaam taught Balak, that he had to get the children of Israel to do. And they did it. And I'm sure that Balaam probably got paid for his services of telling them, if that's implied. But it was a stumbling block. When somebody begins to introduce a false concept, a false doctrine, a false teaching, are to excuse immoral, abominable acts, I'll use that word again because I don't have a better one, to excuse them and say, well, everybody's doing it. We have a right to choose. That's what Cain said. Cain said to God, "I have a right to choose what offering I will give you and how I will conduct my life." and that's what I'm going to do, and I'm not going to obey you. I have a right not to keep the last day of the Feast of Tabernacles, or after the Feast of Tabernacles, the Holy Days, because after all, I want to be home. None of us have the right to override God's command. This has been James Throckmorton speaking to you for the Churches of God.